You're an experienced broadcaster. You got the best job in the world. You're on the top of your game. You've got a great show that's been built around you and your persona. You're blowing it.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome to The Big Lead at 2. Brandi Crews filling in for Dory Monson. Hopefully not blowing it. Trying my best, Andrew. Thank you for that. I love those little gems. We got some more New Year's resolutions in on the text line, specifically New Year's resolutions that you have actually been able to stick to. This one, I decided in 2022 that I would let my light shine. I said hello to strangers. I was kind, thoughtful to others, remembered to say thank you, please, and I appreciate you and your efforts to help me. Kindness, sprinkle that stuff everywhere. I made strangers laugh. It was joyful. I like that one. Very positive. This also from the text line. In 2017, I started seeing a therapist. Best thing I've ever done for myself. Every 2 weeks for almost 6 years now. New Year's resolution was to get a job, and I did today. Oh, did they say what kind of job they got?
They didn't.
Oh, you should share with us. Congratulations. That's very exciting.
You know who the master of resolutions is?
Who?
John Curley, which will he'll probably tell you multiple that he's been able to achieve over the years. But the one that I witnessed was wearing a suit to work every day for a year.
I cannot see him wearing a suit to
work. Isn't that crazy? He did.
Wow.
He absolutely did.
That's interesting. I'd be curious to hear other resolutions John Curley has stuck to. Like I told you on the show the other day, my only one is not to be a bridezilla.
I'm going to hold you to it.
I don't think I will be, but I think I'll get a little stressed. We won't talk about my wedding for a third day because some people in text line said, we don't want to hear about it, Brandi. I was also told that when I say the number to the text line, I need to say it slower.
I saw that
888-973-CAIRO. 888-973-CAIRO. And with that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead this hour.
The big lead, big local.
Now, we have been on the show for the past few days really, really going hard at this George Santos fella. He is the congressman-elect for the 3rd Congressional District in New York, and the man is a liar. I mean, he's lied about just about every aspect of his life. He lied about working for Goldman Sachs, lied about graduating from college. He even lied about being Jewish. Turns out he's not Jewish, although he claimed on Fox News that he never claimed to be Jewish. He only said he was Jew-ish as a joke, which is obviously not true. And I have said that I don't really care the political party of people who lie to get elected. I think it should be much easier, and I don't think you should have to rely on that person's political party not to seat them or to try to kick them out. And that's sort of the situation now in Congress is, will Republicans seat this guy, despite the fact that he's lied about just about everything? I tend to think that he might be kind of a plant. Like, he might be, who is the comedian who does those really detailed, long-term, in-depth cons for comedy? Come on, you know who I'm talking about. The one who wore the little, Borat?
Borat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think this guy is so ridiculous that George Santos might be pulling, like, a long-term Borat con. Mark my word, I said it here on the Dory Monson Show, December 29th, 2022 at 2:10 p.m. I think that has to be. I can't think of another ex. He even, and I'm going to get to why we're talking about this in local in a second, but it also came out, people are now, of course, looking through his Twitter account and other things that he has claimed. He also claimed to be half black, which he's not.
Well, he claimed to be biracial, which he
biracial, half black.
He does. But then he says that it's because he was half like Brazilian or something.
No, he said that he was half black.
He said he was biracial, but he claims to mean that he was half Brazilian.
No,
it doesn't make sense.
There's absolutely, though,
one where he says that
That his father is black or something like that. Because somebody accused him of racism, this is several years ago, racism against the Obamas. And he's basically like, you're going to regret that because I'm half black or I'm biracial. My dad was black or something like that, which he's not. And then he also claimed, there were these tweets dug up, that his mom died on 9/11. And then they found another tweet where he was saying his mom had died like 15 years after 9/11.
They found the obituary.
And she died just like 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. right? So crazy stuff like that. That's why I really think there is a high probability that this is some long-term con.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's like the Fetterman. Like these candidates, I mean, this is just just to prove how messed up our politics are right now, that our politicians are this crazy and we're still electing them.
And we're still seating them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, invariably, and this is what this George Santos guy has done, is he's pointed to the lies of Democrats. And he's not wrong. I mean, Joe Biden has lied a lot. Elizabeth Warren has lied a lot. And there doesn't seem to be this the same level of freak out from the legacy media when it's a Democrat who lies. I mean, we're talking about the president of the United States. And my point has sort of been, look, you can't use somebody else's lies to excuse your own. You're going to have to own that. And George Santos has not owned it. But I stewed on this a little more last night. And I don't think I've quite been mad enough on the Dori Monson show about the fact that you have all this attention around George Santos when locally Democrats still plan to seat Lion Clyde Shavers. And I talked about it a little bit in the big lead at the top of the show about with Marysville Mayor John Nearing, who's up in Snohomish County, and I asked him about Lion Clyde Shavers. So, of course, this was in the 10th Legislative District, and Democrat Clyde Shavers beat out the Republican incumbent by just a handful of votes, even though it had turned out that he lied about being an attorney in official campaign mailers, that he inflated his military service on his campaign website, claiming he'd worked as an officer aboard a nuclear submarine for 8 years when he never worked aboard a nuclear submarine, which is particularly egregious considering that part of his district is now actual people who work aboard nuclear submarines. So he ends up getting caught in these lies. It was his own dad that exposed them. And do I believe his dad probably had other political motivations? Sure. But I mean, he lied. And even the Everett Herald rescinded its endorsement of Clyde Shavers, saying, well, yeah, I mean, he got our endorsement based off material falsehoods. So at the time when this is all coming out, Democrats, higher up Democrats in Olympia were asked, like, are you going to ask him to resign? And they basically said, oh, well, he's learned from his mistakes. Has he, though? The only thing he learned is that you can lie and you can win an election. There were no consequences. What makes you believe that he has learned a dang thing from his quote unquote mistakes? And let's be clear, this isn't a mistake. This is just narcissism combined with being a frequent liar and getting away with it your entire life. So as we are having this conversation about Congressman-elect George Santos in New York's third, I do think it is a really good time to re-up the conversation about Clyde Shavers. After all, this is a local radio show. And, you know, yes, we're going to talk about George Santos, but I tend to agree. And after I stood on it last night, like, we need to be just as upset about the fact that Democrats have virtually let this Clyde Shavers situation go. And on Twitter today, I kind of re-upped it and I tagged House Speaker Lori Jenkins. I tagged the Washington State Democratic Party. I tagged Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck. I tagged Governor Jay Inslee. And I said, you guys need to do the right thing here. We still have time before the legislative session for you to take a consistent moral stand on this issue and to say, no, the Democratic Party in Washington State isn't going to support a serial liar who won because he fooled the people of his district. And now, do I think that they're actually going to do anything? No. But I think that we should absolutely continue to press this issue until at least they're forced to comment on it. I haven't really seen any members of the mainstream media in Seattle try to press the higher up Democrats on this issue. I saw like a little quote from the majority leader in the Senate and from the Speaker of the House, but no indication that they plan to ask Clyde Shavers to resign. But the point that I made to them on Twitter, if they saw it, is that it's not as if you're going to lose that seat. It's not as if getting rid of Clyde Shavers or forcing him to resign via pressure or refusing to let him be part of the caucus, it's not as if you lose that seat. You get to pick a different Democrat. And you can pick someone who does not have the baggage of Clyde Shavers. So I really don't see the downside for Democrats. Help me understand what the downside would be. You get to take a consistent moral stand on this. You get to claim the moral high ground by saying, when we had a liar, we purged that liar from our ranks. And then the next time, because there will be a next time, when there is some Republican who lies, you can say, hey, here's what we did when we had a liar in our ranks. So you get to take the moral high ground and you still get to keep the seat. you still get to keep the vote. And not only that, you get to cherry pick someone to take his place. So genuinely, what is the downside for Democrats in Washington State to come out, especially in light of the George Santos debacle that is getting so much attention from the legacy media? And you even have some Republicans in Congress who have come out and said, I don't think we should seat him. So now more than ever, I think there's an incentive for Democrats in Washington State to take a similar position and to show Republicans in Congress what they should be doing with Mr. Lion George Santos. I was also notified today, by the way, one of my podcast listeners, Andrew, that Clyde Chavers has wiped his social media. That unless he blocked all the people who have been critical of him. Nicole, do you want to double check on this? I believe that he has deleted his Twitter account and he's deleted his Facebook account. And I'm sure he could make some sort of claim that this was, it was a campaign account and my campaign's over. But I don't see one. No, mm-hmm. I don't see it either. And I had tagged him in a couple posts on his official page. Because if I'm going to like rail on some politician, I'm usually going to try to tag them. I want them to see it, you know? So my challenge would be for any Democrat that's listening, especially if you are in the 10th legislative district, which means that your current state rep is Greg Gilday, who's now no longer going to be on. I would challenge you ask yourself, what would I do if this were a Republican who won the seat based on material falsehoods? I would ask you to ask yourself that question, answer it thoughtfully and genuinely, and then take action and put your money where your mouth is, or in this case, your emails. I think you should take some time to send emails to Clyde Chavers, kind emails, but forceful, sharing your opinion. I think House Speaker Lori Jenkins ought to get an email from you. Jay Inslee, Denny Heck, any Democrat who is in a position of authority in Olympia, if you really feel strongly about making sure that someone who lied about his military service, lied about being an attorney, doesn't get to represent you and your district in the halls of the State House in Olympia, stand up for yourself. Take the moral high ground. Send an email, a nice email, please. I don't want anybody complaining that, Brandy sent the angry mob after us. No, make it a nice email. But voice your opinion on the matter. Because if it were a Republican, I guarantee that a lot of these Democrats would have a really, really strong opinion about it. And I wish I could.
All of the links are broken on his website. It links to his Twitter, mm-hmm. his Facebook, and his Instagram. They're all broken.
And you know what? I guarantee that's not because he was sick of getting so much hate. I bet it's because he didn't want people to dig up old stuff he'd mm-hmm. said, like what's happening with George Santos. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's half black and his mom died on 9/11. And they're finding all these tweets from like 3-4 years ago. Lion Clyde Chavers was probably like, gosh, I'm going to get out in front of that and I'll just scrub my social mm-hmm. media history. These aren't little lies, people. These are significant lies, and I'm sorry, but we have a huge military population in Washington State and in the 10th Legislative District. And I think out of respect for the service of people who do it honorably, who don't feel the need to inflate their military history, I think we owe it to them to pressure Clyde Chavers to step down. And yeah, Democrats get to pick someone. They get to hand pick someone. There's really no downside for them. So we're going to continue to talk about this. I'm going to bring it back up tomorrow. I've sent some messages out for comment. And if I hear anything back, we'll discuss it tomorrow on The Big Show, which is my last day filling in before the new year. All right. Coming up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top national.
So this story takes us down to Arizona. And the race for attorney general. God, this is really interesting to me. And I hate to just continuously kind of rail on the legacy media. I'm not very far removed from the legacy media, by the way. And I don't have like a hatred of them. I just think that sometimes their bias is very, very obvious. And this is one of those instances. So in the race for Arizona attorney general, the Democrat Chris Mays beat Republican Abraham Hamade, and they were both new to the arena because, of course, the current Secretary of State. Never mind. So Democrat Chris Mays won the race, but there was a recount, and the results of the recount are in today. And if you read any mainstream media article, the headline is going to be some variation of Democrat wins Arizona attorney general race after recount. So their big major takeaway is that the recount didn't change the results and that the Democrat has still won and is going to be the next attorney general. And then they kind of bury in that the fact that the recount in Arizona was literally just running the ballots back through the machines, okay? That's what it was. Before the recount, the Republican candidate was down 511 points or votes. After the recount, he was down 280 votes. Does anyone else not find that incredibly significant? And I'm not a stolen elections person, but we're talking about Maricopa County, which we know had a lot of issues, and that's been acknowledged widely. So taking the same ballots, running them through the machine again, this Democrat went from having a 511 vote lead to a 280 vote lead. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a significant difference of like 250 votes.
I know. Did they not figure out why
and
the
they have
mistakes
not,
were made?
They have not said yet. So this is in the Politico article. Again, it's not the headline that, hey, why was there such a discrepancy? The Politico article says the reason for the discrepancy was not immediately clear. And it's like, well, what other races ought you do a recount in? Because if you're talking about, you know, not a statewide race and maybe some legislative race or whatever, 250 vote difference is incredibly significant. And that's like a margin of error that should not be acceptable to anyone in any sort of political race. So, of course, a Republican candidate is, you know, taking to Twitter saying, we need to get to the bottom of this. This race is not over. And do I think that a future recount will put him above that 280 vote threshold? Probably not. But every single person should want to know. It's not about stolen elections and false claims and this and that. This is a fact. He was behind 511 votes, and now he's behind 280 votes after the exact same ballots were counted. For any elections official from any party, that should be concerning. And there should be a commitment to getting to the bottom of it. Because that's in Maricopa County in Arizona, and that's really significant. And so I just found it very odd that across the mainstream media, that was not a real focus of these stories of what happened here. So we'll see if he tries to take further legal action, Hamade, the Republican, trying to get to the bottom of exactly what went on here. But I don't blame him for wanting to take things a step further and not being satisfied with the first recount, given what a discrepancy there was in the official ballot count. And that has been The Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up on The Big Show, we've talked a lot about, Dory has talked a lot about, the impact that COVID had on our kids and on their education, kids in elementary school, kids in high school, kids in college. I mean, you had some kids, think about this, who they missed like basically 3 years out of their 4 years of higher education where they weren't getting that full experience. Well, there's now some a study out that shows how much money in their lifetime that setback in their education, in their learning, might have cost them. So we'll discuss that coming up next on The Big Show. Welcome back to The Dory Monson Show. Brandi Cruz filling in today and then tomorrow. And then I promise Dory is going to be back on Monday, right?
No, don't promise that.
Oh,
Tuesday.
No, I'm sorry. It's Monday, a holiday.
It is.
Okay, sorry. Tuesday. And he's just going to be ready to go. We've been getting, it's interesting. I love when I'm here, by the way, reading the text line. But, you know, we were talking about Lion Clyde Shavers and Lion George Santos, one of them a Republican congressman-elect in New York's 3rd District, who made up all sorts of weird stuff. He's half black. He's not. He's Jewish. He's not. His mom died at 9/11. She didn't. He worked at Goldman Sachs. I mean, lying about his entire life story, basically. And I pointed out that I'd like Republicans not to seat him. And then we brought the conversation back to Clyde Shavers, who ran in the 10th Legislative District in Washington, ended up unseating the Republican incumbent. But Clyde Schaefer's lied about his military service, lied about being an attorney. And my argument has been, every time we've talked about these stories, that they both, I don't care what party you're from. Like, if you lied to win your seat, then you lied, and I don't think you belong there. And my argument has just been, take a consistent moral position. And it just never ceases to amaze me. You know, we got some texts basically saying, one of them, what politician doesn't lie? Biden does it all the time. And I agree, but that's not the point. I don't think that you can say, well, you know, Biden does it, so it's okay for George Santos to do it. And no, I mean, it's not okay for either of them to do it. And I just want people to take a moral, consistent moral position. And then I got a bunch of texts saying, you know, you're going to rail on Clyde Schaefer's, but the Republicans elected Donald Trump, like the biggest liar of all time. Yeah, Donald Trump also lied all the time. And I just think, as voters of whatever party you tend to vote for, if we stop expecting our elected leaders to tell the truth, and we don't come out aggressively against especially people of our own political party, then it's just such a downward slope. And we've already seen that for several years. I mean, look at candidate quality. Candidate quality is in the gutter. And it's because our expectations are in the gutter. And I've always thought that you should have higher expectations of the people who belong to the party that you vote for, because you're giving that person your vote. Why would you have higher expectations of someone who you're not voting for? That never made sense for me. And so it's just about trying to get the country back to a place of at least some semblance of moral consistency. Nicole sent me the story out of Yakima that just has sparked an interesting conversation here in the studio about what you would do if you knew, like, I think you could go with if it was like one of your last day on Earth, or if you were going to jail.
Right.
So there was this long standoff in Yakima last night. The Yakima Police Department had come out on his Facebook page and basically said, hey, stay away from this area. There's a standoff going on. We've got a guy, multiple felony warrants, and he's refusing to come out. Well, he refused to come out because I think this news outlet was listening like to the radio scanner traffic. He wanted to smoke a cigarette and eat a Hot Pocket.
I mean, if you're going to jail for a long time, what's the last thing that you want to eat or do right before you go in?
I mean, it wouldn't be a Hot Pocket.
No.
For sure.
Mine would be chips and salsa, but good salsa. Like
the salsa you make
from the
is
right,
really good.
Or mine or a restaurant salsa, something like that.
I would eat a taco salad. You know how much I love my taco salad.
That's it?
It's got everything I like in it.
That's true.
But Hot Pocket wouldn't be it. But
no.
I just think it's interesting, like, as those police officers, I think you just sort of say, yeah, let the man eat his Hot Pocket. If he's going to surrender peacefully, you know, because obviously the concern is if you've got a dangerous felon barricaded that, you know, he might try to shoot you or, you know, suicide
right.
by cops. Well, I understand they're taking it seriously. I don't mean to laugh about a situation that was very serious. But if he comes through and says, hey, man, I just want to smoke this cigarette and finish this Hot Pocket, I think you as an officer have to be like, well, that's kind of best case scenario.
Yeah.
Let him eat his gross Hot Pocket.
Oh, they're not gross.
They are gross. You know, what's funny
is, have those for school lunches, I think.
Yeah, but when's the last time you ate one?
Oh, high school.
Yeah, so in high school, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, so flavor didn't really factor into the food we ate. And but now, so we got some Hot Pockets for the neighborhood kids who dog sit for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike went and Mike eats like a 14-year-old boy anyway.
He does.
If it's microwavable, that's fine. And so he went and picked up snacks for them. And of course, he brings home Hot Pockets. And I'm like, kids these days, their palates are way too mature to want a Hot Pocket. But I ended up, a couple weeks later, because the kids didn't eat them, I ended up eating one. And they are really disappointing because there's nothing in them.
That's true. There's always a bunch of air. There's an air pocket within the cheese and little chunks of pepperoni or whatever it is.
Yeah. So I'm sure it's better than whatever he's going to get in the state penitentiary when he winds
true.
Up there. But maybe the Hot Pocket is the only thing he had on hand. So what would you, if you're like going to prison for a long time, and you had a chance to sit and eat something before, you know, the man took you in, what
yeah.
would it be?
We should keep it to what would you eat, not do.
Yes. What would you eat? It's kind of like the last meal question. all right. The pandemic, of course, had some really devastating impacts on young people in this country. I mean, everything from their mental health and suicide rates to the quality of their education to the furtherance of their education. I mean, gosh, I can't even imagine having missed your like best years in high school, some of the best years of your life at school with your friends, sitting at home staring at everybody through a computer screen. And we know that kids didn't learn as well that way. And then there's some folks who almost their entire college experience was at home on Zoom learning that way, which is just terrible. But there was this new study out from Stanford University that talks about the long term, and I'm actually very impressed that Stanford University would concern itself with the long term impacts that students had during pandemic restrictions, because wasn't Stanford University the same university who came out with a list of like words that are not woke enough that you have to stop using?
Yes, I think it's specifically a professor there, but yeah.
All right, so I'm going to take this with a grain of salt, but I do think it's interesting that they looked at it. So what they looked at is the long-term income loss that these kids who missed out on quality education or maybe even put off starting their college education, because if you're in the middle of COVID, you'd already missed your senior year. There were some kids who decided, well, I'm going to take like a little skip year or whatever it's called, a gap year, is that what it is? And I'm going to go to college later. And maybe that didn't manifest. So the study's author, Eric Hanushek, says that there is overwhelming evidence that students in school during the closure period and during all the other adjustments that happen are achieving at significantly lower levels than would have been expected without the pandemic. The study was entitled The Economic Cost of the Pandemic. And it says that for some states, it will result in a loss of GDP of 2.9% based on lower earnings that these students are going to earn throughout their lifetime for maybe putting off college, deciding that they weren't going to go to college, et cetera, et cetera. So the economic cost of the pandemic study analyzed the National Assessment of Educational Progress data, and it found that between 2019 and 2022, test scores in math and English dropped dramatically across the country. They dropped an average of 8 points across the country. And that came, so in, you know, one of the things these studies always kind of look at and say, okay, what does that mean really? But in the U.S., the math and English scores had been on the steady increase for two decades. And then all of a sudden, you have this 8-point drop. And the study says that all of the gains that the country made in students and test scores for math and English, that the pandemic erased all of the gains in test scores made between the year 2000 and the year 2019. So that's how much that window of the pandemic set our students back in math and English. And again, you know, I go back to how many times did Dory say on the show? How many times did Dory express his concern on the show about what the school closures were doing to kids? I mean, from very, very early on in the pandemic, that first summer, I remember Dory talking about this and other Republicans who were vilified for speaking out about, hey, maybe we need to find a way to keep healthy kids in school because this is going to have a severe impact not only on their mental health, but on their learning. And it was sort of like, oh, no, but we can't expose, you know, healthy kids to this virus that probably is not going to hurt them. And, they were people like Dory. I mean, they were in the minority when they were talking about their concerns about what was going to happen to kids. And now you've seen all of this acknowledgement of exactly that. The mental health issues, the suicide rates, the quality of learning just in the gutter. Now,
you remember that cut that we had from Larry Delaney, who's the WEA president, but he said, oh, if our kids are behind it, the whole world's going to be behind or the whole country's going to be behind because they're all staying home. So it's no big deal.
I do remember that. But it is a big deal. Oh, do you have it here? Oh, do we have time to play it?
Yeah, go for it. You're fine.
Our kids are resilient. And yeah, I think one of the concerns that as a parent, we have concerns that, oh, is my child falling behind? Well, my question will be, falling behind who?
Oh, gosh.
Across the country, everyone has missed certain learning. So if everyone is, quote, behind, I guess no one is behind.
Yeah, let's not worry about the fact, Larry Delaney, that we have now erased all of our progress we've made in the U.S. in math and English scores from 2000 to 2019. Yeah, not a big deal at all. All right, Brandi Cruz, filling in for Dory Monson. Awesome audio clips of the day are next. wait. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Andrew looked at me like, wrong words. You know, I was hoping I could stay a couple more hours. Would that be okay with John Curley?
Hey, go for it. I'm going home.
No, Mike and I have a big evening ahead of us. Do you know what we're doing?
Oh, what?
Did I already tell you what we're doing?
No, you didn't.
We're going to Costco.
Oh, that's exciting.
When you're an adult, Costco is about as exciting as your evenings get.
I really do love it.
You know, it's funny. When we first started dating, you know, of course, I was living in the city. And he was living out in the burbs. And I'd never been to Costco because what would a single woman in her 20s who lives in a tiny Seattle apartment need Costco for?
It was like, I've gone to Costco my whole life. I just love it.
I'd never been because I'm like, where am I going to put 50 rolls of toilet paper? I would never go. And so the first time I went with him, I was sort of like, I don't want to go because I was still living in my own apartment. And I was like, well, what am I going to do at Costco? What am I going to get? And now if that man dares to go to Costco without me, I mean, that's like... That's a strike on our relationship.
Do you separate when you get in there and you look around some stuff? He goes and looks around some stuff?
We tend to do the two cart thing.
Yeah.
Because I'll also get some stuff for work sometimes. So we try to do separate carts. But he has the Costco credit card. And so we like the points that gives us. So sometimes he just pays for it all and then I, you know, pay it back. But we've also been trying to get better at, not buying stuff we don't need at Costco because we're trying to save for, you know, we're trying to save for a
wedding.
We bought some land, a wedding, and all this stuff. And so we're like, let's not go to Costco and go crazy. So we keep each other in line a little bit.
Good.
We kind of have this veto process where I can veto something in
his cart.
What
are you going to have for dinner tonight after you go to Costco? Because I always go there thinking, like, what's for dinner tonight?
We really like the, man, honestly, if Costco is not a sponsor of the Dory Monson Show, it should be when I fill in because that's all we talk about. I'll probably get one of those pumped up steroid chickens. But also, I really like the loaded peppers.
Those
are ground
delicious.
Beef peppers. Yeah. They're good. They're good for you.
I like it.
It's really good. Okay, you told me you have awesome audio clips, Nicole.
Yeah,
you got a couple. All right, so there was this weird... So in Nashville, Tennessee, there is a video that has gone viral on social media, as videos often do, where a family says that they were at the Nashville International Airport and they encountered a police officer who was threatening to arrest some passengers who were trying to figure out what was going on with their Southwest Airlines flight. Where is this? I'm trying to find this. Oh, here it is. Okay. This is from WKRM in Nashville.
I thought that it would be best to start recording because I wasn't sure what was going to happen.
As they struggle to fly home to Ohio from the Nashville International Airport, you can hear a BNA officer threatening to arrest these passengers.
You said you're going to arrest people for trespassing,
yes,
for being at a ticket counter for a flight.
If you don't have a valid ticket and you're on the secured side and refuse to leave, you will be arrested.
It was absolutely shocking to experience that. I think that the comments were meant to strike a chord of fear. And honestly, for a moment, fear rose up, but then a righteous indignation kind of rose up as well.
I didn't think that he would be that crazy to do that in front of everybody.
The officer in the video claims their flight was canceled. Therefore, their ticket was not valid and they had to leave. But Shelly and Amani say that wasn't true. And it wasn't until a little after 4 o'clock in the morning when their flight was officially canceled.
Okay, first of all, I do wonder if there's a little bit more to this.
I know there's more to this.
As I'm listening, I'm like, he would really just come up to some folks who are trying to figure out.
No.
Part of me thinks that they were probably losing their minds at the ticket counter.
They wanted a flight, and Southwest had no flights leaving. Like, they were all canceled for days now, so I don't buy it. Okay. But
all the information we have received from Southwest was contrary to what he stated in our first encounter with him. There was no belligerent behavior, no disrespect towards the officer or any other officers. And so I think that the statement from the...
Okay.
What
so
about
that's
disrespect
their
towards the...
towards
like
the ticketing staff. I'm not trying to, and I wasn't there, but something sounds amiss here.
Airport, while timely, was not complete. There needs to be an appropriate address to the officer's conduct.
Yeah, I tend to think that officer was called there for a reason, but maybe there's more to it. And it is an airport after all, so they must have all the available footage to really get to the bottom. And if he really came up, I mean, just think about this. Let's use our noggins for a second. As an airport officer, are you going to approach people randomly at a ticket counter and threaten to arrest them?
No, I don't blame the officer at all. I think that you're just looking for whatever excuse to get them out of people's way. I mean, I'm sure the airport is a chaotic nightmare right now. And I would be like, just go home. Just go home. Your flight's not happening. Go home. Go to a hotel. We'll reimburse you, whatever. Get out of here.
Yeah, I can see people refusing to leave until they go on a flight in Southwest. Like, there are no flights.
None.
Oh, we ran out of time on awesome audio clips of the day. Well. I'm sorry. We'll get to more of them tomorrow. Brandi Cruz filling in for my friend Dori Monson. I'll be back tomorrow. And then, of course, in the new year, Dori Monson will be back on the big show. So I'll see all of you tomorrow. John Curley and Sherry Elliker coming up next.
Can I get a translation? Because that was gibberish.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.